Welcome to the Nerdentials Podcast, starring your hosts, Joe Tweedy, Matthew Johnson, Jeff Berry, and Nick Thomas.
Wait. Guys, we're going to do a blockbuster breakdown since we're about halfway through the year. There's been a lot of great films, a lot of flops in between those great films, and a lot of things we're looking forward to. So we're going to take a different approach to this. We're going to go over the movies that have come out this year so far. So guys, our first, we're going to open up with, well, you know what? What?
Well, no, I was thinking he could start it.
Oh, well, my editing joys would be remiss if I didn't include this. Guys, it's Movie Matters. Alright guys, Movie Matters for the week. That is the topic of discussion for this episode. We are going to now cover the good, or the one film that stood out for us that we really liked. I think we're going to take that angle on this. For me, guys, I'll just kick it off. I went and saw a Better Late Than Never film that came out back in March by the title of Logan. I finally went ahead, fired it up, and watched it in all its glory, all its rated R beauty. And
good film.
I was beside myself with how incredible it turned out. Mm-hmm. Before I go any further into this, I'll give a shout out still to Wonder Woman. It does hit my top 10 for the year, but we already spent 25 minutes on it, covering it in last episode, guys. So go check out episode 10 with Wonder Woman in the title, and you guys can get our opinions on that. That being said, though, I only watched this literally the night before we were recording now. Late last night, so this is super fresh in my head. This movie touched on every aspect of what I had heard from everyone, the excitement, the love that it's gotten up to this point. I felt all of that. Just a quick rundown in case you guys missed it. It's in the near future. Where an old man, Logan, he's kind of wearing down, is trying to take care of Charles Xavier, who's also wearing down and slowly dying from a degenerative brain disease. And they're being hunted down by assholes, basically. I'm just gonna summarize it that way. He does meet a young girl who happens to be very much like himself, part of a child experimentation project by a larger group that was trying to basically make a bunch of mutant super soldiers. A small girl by the name Laura, who we learn through the mythology of this story that she's X-23, so literally has Logan's DNA, Wolverine's DNA, in her.
Mm-hmm. Basically his child.
Basically his child. This whole movie played hard on the heartstrings of Charles Xavier being like a father to Logan and Logan being a father to this little girl. It was kind of like this sweet, tightly wound little picture into a closely connected family, I guess you could say. Guys, full spoilers for this show. I'll just put that there.
Okay.
Moving forward. Okay, so I am spoiling this.
Yes.
Danger. Spoiler.
So, okay, guys. Man, I could do a whole episode on all the things I loved about it, but I don't want to do that because we got a lot of things everyone wants to talk about. So I will give a few key points that really just blew me away. Just at the very beginning open scene with the guys trying to jack the tires off of his limo. And the first scene I saw where his claws just went up a guy's chin through a guy's face, my gut reaction was just like, oh, Yes!
Yes.
It was just a guttural yes, like, oh my god, that's Wolverine, yes.
Want, so oh. much want. So,
and it just,
I would agree with that.
Bring it home. Oh, man. Just keep going.
And it just continues from there, but...
Yeah. And he's tame. He's tame.
He's like half drunk right now when this is happening. Like, he's just waking up from being passed out.
And I'm just talking for the movie in general. He's tame.
Oh, he's tame compared to what happened with X-23.
Yeah.
And, like, you and shout out to our geekologist brother, Derek. Guys, go back. Like I said, I think I mentioned it. Episode 2, those two guys give their opinions on it. Go check that episode out. But both of those guys agreed, man.
I don't think you were there.
All of us. All five of us with Paul. Not minus Nick.
Okay.
Anyway. Yeah, all of us were there minus Nick at the time. I know, Nick, it's okay.
You weren't even thought of. Wait.
You were...
I'm just kidding, I love you.
Hard cut? Oh, that is harsh.
I love you.
Alright, guys. I will say this, though. Just one of the things I appreciated... about director James Mangold, in a statement he said as to why he appreciated the fact that the studio gave him the go-ahead for R rating. He said it wasn't about the ability to show the violence, to show Wolverine in all the gore, or even X-23, but it allowed him to do the standalone, more indie-style format, because at that point they're not selling to a child-based audience. He was able to make the scenes longer, make them more artistic, allow for more intellectually intelligent dialogue between characters, and of course, the R just gives way to being able to be more violent if you want to.
Yeah.
And that really...
I would say the R gives it to, like, more realism, as in to, like, how we would perceive how Wolverine would be.
Yeah, like his emotional reaction and then leading to the violence that laid before him, obviously.
No, if it wasn't R-rated, you wouldn't have got that feel that this is the end for Logan.
Yeah.
The only thing I will say, and maybe I need to watch it more than once, because I literally just saw it once, guys, but I feel like Patrick Stewart's exit out of this show was abrupt, and I only say that because I thought it would have lingered a little longer or been more emotionally gripping. And although it was still emotional, it was just very quick and abrupt when the young X-24, young powerhouse Logan clone that comes in halfway through the film, just literally in his sleep, stabs him in the chest, and he starts bleeding to death.
Mm-hmm.
And they were staying at this nice people's home that they helped on the side of the road. And so, like, in the middle of the night, literally, they get attacked. And it was just so abrupt. And I was talking to Matt off air about this, and he kind of agreed. Yeah, it was a bit... It kind of left you, like, what?
But that's
a little real. More in shock.
Yeah, almost, but that's real. Abrupt.
Yeah. Oh, no, absolutely. And
yeah,
I was like, whoa. Not in a negative way, I was just like...
That sucks.
It was a disappointing reality check. Like, I thought they were going to make it linger more. Like, I was going to feel more sad, but this is so abrupt.
Like, well, like, the saddest part about that is that it happens. And, I mean, Patrick Stewart is completely lucid at that point, and he's talking and explaining things to Logan that Logan wanted to hear. And you get all of this exposition with Charles Xavier, but you get all of this exposition, you get all of these answers that Logan wanted, but he doesn't get them, and he never will, because Charles Xavier dies. And
right, yeah.
And it's like, that is so much more, like, that it sucks. Sucks hard, but it's like such a good hit.
Yeah,
that abruptness was almost as heavy hitting as Dumbledore in Harry Potter. It was just bam.
Yeah,
you're like, what the hell just happened?
It was a slap in the face.
That was very quick, and you're like, you think about it for a long time afterwards because it was so quick. It didn't give you time to think about it while it was happening because it was so quick. But then just kind of shifting forward to the second most impactful thing for me in that movie. I might attribute it to being four beers deep before the end of the film, but I'm also an emotional guy, so like, okay, I got teary-eyed during the No Man's Land scene in Wonder Woman. We didn't even talk about that, but we're not talking about that now. We'll bring that up at another time, but...
No, let's talk about your feelings now.
We are. My feelings now on Logan in the final 10 minutes of that film...
They were brutal.
It were brutal, and the part that wrecked me entirely is when little X-23, I mean Laura, I mean Logan's freaking daughter, it starts crying as Logan is basically taking his final breath, and she just buries her face in his chest and whimpers the words, "Daddy." I'm getting like sad.
You're getting all teary now.
Oh my god, it was so disgustingly upsetting.
We're both parents. Nick's a parent. It's a heartbreaking thing for, like, how would you feel, like, for your child to sit there and lay on your chest and say, "Daddy," after you just died?
I know, and I mean,
and that's people. That's what's going on in your mind at that moment.
For me, in that moment, though, I mean, yes, that's completely relatable for you and me, but the real factor I was examining was just how flipping good that little actress is. Daphne Keene, she was only 11 when they filmed this movie. Her sadness towards him is just so believable. Like, she was also, like, strong-willed and badass. It was all kind of like a almost feministic in her childlike attack on life. And just, like, you know, she was, you know, being bullied by someone. She took action immediately, fearlessly.
Yeah.
And she just had that snarky attitude, like, when Logan was, like, "Shut up," yelling at her and stuff while she's, like, yelling German, Russian, something or other at him.
Spanish.
Guys.
Yeah. They were in Mexico.
Yes.
Oh no.
And did you notice that all the clones, and I think that they explained this, all the clones are half Mexican because they used Mexican women to actually birth all of the clones.
Yes, complete brain fart on my part. Yes, I knew it was near the border of Mexico. I even wrote that in the description on the notes here. But, so she's yelling in Spanish, and he's getting upset at her, telling her to just shut up, and then she just takes the prerogative. Like, he's on the verge of passing out in the Jeep, and she ends up driving him to a medical facility herself. Little 11-year-old girl just takes action.
Mm-hmm.
Both in physical defense and just the caring of Logan as he's, like, dying, essentially. And then, that end scene was just, like, heartbreaking, and she was such a believable performance from her. So this goes into, like, I don't have an exact rate. We're only halfway through the year, but I put this film at literally, I don't know if it's number one yet because the rest of the year hasn't hit, but I'm going to put it in the top five. I'm going to cut it down to the top five.
And I know for sure, I remember saying this in that episode, that this could potentially be Oscar-worthy. Like,
at least Golden Globes for sure, because Golden Globes was willing to nominate Deadpool.
Yeah.
This is a shoe-in, absolutely, for Golden Globes at the least, and definitely a consideration for Oscars.
It'll get a nomination, at least. Yeah. Like, I don't know if it will win anything, but it will get the nomination, which is huge. For any movie in general, but for a superhero movie to be nominated for more than just special effects or makeup.
But the actual scenes and
direction of a film.
Real quick, Nick, did you want to say anything else?
Yeah, the few times that got me kind of emotionally was Patrick Stewart. His portrayal of him going in and out of lucidity. I just lost my grandma last year, and that's, it kind of reminded me of that. And he played that part really, really well.
You know
Patrick
what's
Stewart?
You know what's disgusting about this, dude? I mean, as from a from an admiring standpoint, what's ridiculous about him is he has maintained a healthy weight his entire life, and he went on record on an interview stating that he actually purposely lost 20 pounds for this role. And he's never intentionally lost weight for any role before.
Yeah. Well, I think that he wanted to send it, because Patrick Stewart loved being Xavier.
Yeah.
He absolutely loved it. And
this was a final send-off, and he really wanted to put everything into it.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, Hugh Jackman
also trained. He was quoted as saying, "This is the hardest he's ever trained for a role ever."
One thing that I wanted to notice, and this is going to totally, it's totally off the rails of where we're going, but it is Logan related. I did notice, like, when he was doing X-24, that Hugh Jackman now has epic old man ass. Like, he really does. Like, there's nothing there. When he's grabbing that body and walking it up, and you just get that, like, lower leg shot, and his ass is, like, just sucked up like an old man, and he's walking, and I was just like, man, Hugh Jackman, what happened, bro? I was like, you used to have a ham back there, and now it's, like, nothing. It's just like, it's just because, what, now he's like 55 or something like that, and so he doesn't have the he doesn't have the muscle.
Well, he lost a lot of weight for this show, this movie.
Yeah, because he was sick and stuff, but I mean, he still had like a bunch on him, especially when he's supposed to be playing X-24.
Where did your booty go? Wait.
But yeah.
He did a lot to pull off the role.
You can't grow a butt after you're old for some reason, I guess, like, because it wasn't there, man.
Squats, squats, squats. Keep doing squats. Okay. Anyways.
Sorry. I know, but
no,
I...
No, it's fine.
The J-Lo booty.
Just a very fast wrap-up. I just wanted to insert these real quick. Maybe just a couple of these that I thought were fun. Trivia facts on IMDb are always fascinating. I always check them out when I'm looking up films that I really enjoyed. Something that I thought was crazy was Daphne Keene, who played X-23... When she was 11 years old at the time of the filming, and so she was not allowed into the casino, even with all the correct shooting permits. So some shots were done with her on a green screen, and some scenes were shot in the actual casino with Keane's body double, Sharamine Martin, who is over 18 but has a similar build. I thought, I was like, what? Like, even with all the filming permits, they wouldn't let her into the casino for the shot.
Whatevs. That's weird. Stupid, but whatever.
It's stupid, but it's still... I mean, you know, through the magic of cinema, they still pulled it off.
Mm-hmm.
Hugh Jackman stated in an interview that the only way he would reprise his role is if a crossover between Deadpool and Wolverine would happen.
Yep.
Oh! Hey. He also stated that he would have postponed his retiring of the Wolverine if he had known it was going to be an ongoing joke in the Deadpool movie. I was like, oh man, you should have just... I know it was timing and everything, but yeah. It's funny to know. And last side note that I thought was endearing, because I really enjoyed the dinner table scene.
Oh yeah.
How they just kind of made up, like, literally, even if it was script written, it felt like, Logan on cue is just like, yeah, grandpa, and they're bickering back and forth about him going through the school. That entire scene, by request of director Mangold, after several shots of scripting it, said, improv this crap, please. And the whole scene is improv'd.
That's awesome.
I was like, dude.
I need to rewatch this film, because I only saw it in the theaters, and I haven't gone back to it yet. But it is a beautiful and great film.
All right, so that's my Logan. Let's pass it over to Matt. Matthew, what's your pick for the year?
Matthew, what you got?
So far.
Have you heard Dead Man Tell No Tales?
Say what?
Dead Man Tell No
Tales. I haven't, because Dead Man...
Okay, so, Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man Tell No Tales. It was, by far, probably one of my favorite Pirates of the Caribbean, besides the first one.
Okay.
So you kind of more or less did not like the following.
I liked 3.
No, 3 was good. 4, not so much. Mm-hmm. 2, meh. So it kind of goes like 1-5-3 for me, I think.
Okay.
So, Jack Sparrow finds himself being hunted again by some sort of spirit type person.
Yeah. I forgot. I can't remember because I saw the trailer. I haven't seen the movie yet, but
He's played by Javier
Bardem.
Bardem, who does Captain Salazar. Mm-hmm. He was perfect in this movie. Like, I love Javier Bardem as an actor.
Yeah.
Like, he, when it comes to playing evil guys, somehow, some way,
he does
it justice.
Like, oh, yeah. Like, Skyfall, No Country for Old Men.
He yes. Just,
and they're all three, from what I've seen of, what's it, the Salazar, you said?
Yes.
But that's different than who he was in Skyfall, and that's way different than who he was in No Country for Old Men.
Yeah.
The silent shotgun.
So, essentially, how it happens is that Jack Sparrow, back when he was just a wee little lad, ended up sinking Captain Salazar.
Mm-hmm.
Captain Salazar was actually part of the Spanish army. And he was sinking...
So he wasn't a pirate at
all? He wasn't a pirate. He was sinking pirate ships. He was killing pirates. Doesn't matter if they were man, woman, or child. They were all dying.
Wow.
Everyone's up for grabs.
So, what he's playing in this, Dead Men Tell No Tales, he leave... After every pirate ship that he consumes on the seven seas,
mm-hmm.
he leaves one to tell a tale.
Oh, okay.
And in hopes of getting it back to Jack Sparrow that he's going for him.
And so the guy that was in Gods of Egypt is that, from the trailer, is that guy.
Yes.
Okay. and that's William Turner's son?
Yes. That is Henry Turner.
Okay.
Oh.
And this is...
Oh.
This is actually...
like Brenton Thwaites.
18 years...
In the future?
Kind of in the future.
Okay.
So, well, no, 12, 15, something. Like, you see Henry as a small child, and he's trying, and he's talking to his dad, and he goes, oddly enough, what's his name? Orlando Bloom? Yes.
Will Turner.
Will Turner. Shows his face. Kind of like how he was at the end of the third movie. He was standing on mm-hmm. land because he has the ability for one day to stand on land.
Sorry, William Turner?
Will Turner.
Yeah. Because he took over for somebody, Davy Jones.
Davy Jones.
Yeah.
Davy Jones is no longer, it's Will Turner. He takes over, and basically, he sees his son at about the age of 7, 8. And his son says that I will free you from this curse in the very beginning of the movie. And it goes 12 years in the future. He's actually a swordsman. Go figure.
Weird.
So weird.
And he's in search of Jack Sparrow. But at the same time, he also has meets... a witch, quote unquote, Karina Smith, who is played by K.S. Scodelario.
Scodelario, yeah.
Who plays in Scorch Trials as Teresa.
Okay.
Scodelario. She is actually a very well educated woman in this time period. And this time period, if you know more than like sailors do about stars and everything,
you're a witch.
You were marked as a witch.
Yeah.
So, she's actually about to be hung, and he's about to get his head chopped off.
Nice. And all of a sudden...
And so, everything comes down to, she knows a map that K. cannot be read by any man because it's not written. It is actually in the stars.
Huh.
And it's the quest for the trident of Poseidon.
Poseidon.
Huh. Okay. Okay.
So, they end up going on this quest to find this trident, and comes to behold that Jeffrey Rush, a.k.a. Barbossa, is also in this movie.
Barbossa's been in every movie.
Turns out that Barbossa is her father.
Oh, god damn. Are you serious? Yes. They're going this route where everybody has a son or a daughter. It's just going to keep going. Continue.
Why?
He doesn't realize it until almost the very end. She doesn't realize it till he dies.
What's your last name? Barbossa. That's my last name.
No, she actually is Smith.
Why'd you say Barbossa?
She went by her mother's name.
Yeah. She didn't know. Why did you say that name?
It's a trigger word, man.
Don't trigger me, Nick. Yeah. Don't.
Anyways, she always thought that her father was a scientist like herself, kind of thing, and talked about the stars. He actually had a piece of how to find the trident to begin with him.
Barbossa?
The entire time, yeah.
And he didn't even know?
It was on his, it's a tattoo that he has on his arm.
Huh.
And it's part of the map.
Okay.
I call bullshit. And
you haven't even seen the movie.
I kid. Move on.
Anyways, there's plenty of action in this movie. They find the trident, and
way to bury the lead. They find it?
They find it, but I won't tell you what they did with it.
Oh.
But I
shoved it up there. Shoved it up Salazar's. Who's it?
Captain Salazar. Anyways, at the very end, it leads into Jack Sparrow at the end of the movie has the campus, and it leads to the sixth and final film.
Good. They're going to be done. That's all. I hope that it goes off on a high note, because I really liked how Javier Bardem looked in this film.
Yes.
Like, that was beautiful CG with them just looking like they're underwater, even when they're on a boat. Where,
yes,
the movements, the hair is just kind of lagging behind and everything. It was beautifully done. And then while they're talking, just the water coming out, and they're just waterlogged. It looked good, and it had my interest, and I want to see it.
You better see it. It
kind of bothered me to hear that the actual script changed just because Johnny Depp didn't want to face a woman as a villain.
Okay.
It was originally Bardem's part was originally supposed to be a woman.
Huh. That would have been even cooler. I wonder who they would have cast. You know who they should have cast, which would have been really cool, and they didn't make it Spanish, but, what's her name? Captain Phasma.
Oh. Gwendolyn Christie,
yes,
who plays Brienne of Tarth
from Game of Thrones. From Game of Thrones.
I think that's a little past the season he's on. No, Brienne you should know who she is. She swears allegiance to Catelyn Stark,
she'll protect the Stark women.
Yes. She would have been great. She would have been great in that role.
She's like 6.5 feet tall, dude.
Yeah, she's an Amazonian woman.
She's a real Amazonian woman, seriously.
Yeah. Sorry, continue. That was a little side tangent.
What's really funny is this movie is actually the shortest movie of all five.
Really?
By 3 minutes.
What was the shortest before then? Was it two?
The first,
okay. The sixth and final movie will only be 45 minutes.
It only ties in everything that happened. No.
A nice little wrap-up, a bow tie, if you will.
But just One thing I loved about this is that Henry and Jack both have, like, the Will and Jack back and forths.
Oh, yeah.
Like...
That kid is a good actor.
He is!
Like, he really is a good actor, and...
Orlando Bloom?
No, Orlando Bloom. The guy who's playing Henry. The guy from...
Brenton...
I've only seen him in...
Oh.
Brenton Thwaites. Gods of Egypt.
Oh, Brenton Thwaites, who plays Henry Turner. Yes. Okay, yeah.
Can I give you a fun fact about Johnny Depp and Pirates of the Caribbean?
Yeah, sure.
Every once in a while, Johnny Depp will get into Jack Sparrow costume and replace one of the animatronics in the Pirates of the Caribbean ride in Disneyland.
What?
Yes.
I actually heard that rumor. I didn't know it actually...
He actually does it.
I heard that.
Yeah.
And he actually keeps his costume with him wherever he goes. So if he wants to get in costume and go to a hospital or stuff, he does it.
Yeah, because Jack Sparrow is Jack Sparrow. Like, he's iconic.
Go see this movie if you haven't already. It's still in theaters. Should be coming out on Blu-ray, actually, in late August. I believe I saw that on Redbox. but, yeah.
Sweet.
So, Mr. Jeff.
Yes, that is me.
What is your good movie? We had to freaking battle this out.
Yeah, guess what? No, I called it before you, man. Because I was the first one. I saw it
the whole day before me.
No, I saw it on Friday. I saw it on Friday.
I saw it on Saturday.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, we just talked about it. That's right. Okay. Yeah, I did see it before you.
And we're here.
And yeah, I was like, Spider-Man, that's me. Okay, but I'm talking about Spider-Man Homecoming. It is the sixth iteration of the Spider-Man series. Third iteration, six movie out of Spider-Man movies. Thomas Holland decides to take on the suit, and he does an amazing job. I think what he brings to the table is exactly what Peter Parker needed. He is young. He's young enough to actually look like he could still be in high school. And a great thing about this whole, the whole cast with Zendaya and really everybody else that they had playing his friends, they look the part of being that young. And that helps with them being like 20 years old and younger, that they can still...
Ironically, they've been doing the Benjamin Button treatment on him since Sam Raimi's Tobey Maguire started out at 29 when he was cast.
That's true.
29, and Andrew Garfield started in his early mid 20s, 25, 24, and now we got Tom Holland, young 20.
Yeah,
they're going in reverse here.
Tom Holland did a great job. I think that he embodied exactly how I remember Spider-Man being. At least, like, I guess, like, how I would envision him being, like, a 15-year-old. Because I remember watching in the, he's supposed to be a senior and everything in, like, the animated series that I would watch when I was a kid. Or, like, we would all watch when we were kids, growing up. But, he just seems like an overexcited person. Just finally getting to become the superhero that he knows that he can B just doesn't know how to get there. And it's basically more of a coming-of-age story or a coming-of-spider story for Tom Holland, or for Peter Parker. I think what they did and what Marvel had said that they wanted to do was really stay clear of the things that happened in the last five movies, and that was showing a lot of spider sense. And him just going through the cityscape of Manhattan. If you notice, that doesn't really happen. That doesn't happen at all.
No, it doesn't.
He's not swinging through the streets of Manhattan really at all in this movie. There's a few quick little jump cuts of him landing or something like that, but not going
full
through.
Swinging.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And no spider sense. You'll see subtle hints of spider sense, like when he's taking on the thugs that are robbing the bank in the Avengers masks, when they're trying to punch him in the face, he's dodging it like how he would with his spider sense. Or when both of these are actually in the trailer, but when he shoots the sticky bomb, or like his web bomb, onto the car, right before a guy starts charging him, and then as soon as the guy trips it, it just splats him over. Those are him showing off that he still has spider sense without saying like, oh yeah, look at the waves showing that I'm having a spider sense thing going on.
Yeah.
I personally think they should have done the spider sense how they did in the cartoon, where there's like this psychedelic, like lightning strike behind.
That would be cool.
You wanted to go back to the 90s?
Yeah.
I must say that even though that part's in the trailer, when I was watching the movie, mm-hmm. that part still made me laugh.
Oh yeah. I think one of my favorite parts is when he's running through the suburbs of at Liz's party, and he's running through, and then he goes to shoot his web and grab onto something like he would, and he just shoots out like a huge stream of his webbing for probably a good 2 or 3 seconds before he's like, crap!
Yeah, it's just like, oh.
Yeah,
oh,
there's nothing to attach onto here.
And he starts running through the
and he's going through the golf course, and he's like, this sucks!
So are his web shooters organic or mechanical?
They are mechanical, which is great. I'm glad that they went back to the cartridge thing, because that's how Spider-Man should be.
Now, a quick question. I've heard that it goes a bit heavy on the mechanical side, especially with Tony Stark's influence. How do you feel about that play in this movie?
I've always been more of the person that drew onto the side of Peter Parker's a genius in and of himself. And you get to see him being a genius, but being not like as huge of a prodigy as he usually is, because he's making his own web, his own.
They
web
showcased fluid. At least I saw
that, like, he's mixing it up in school and stuff. And he actually made his own web shooters before, right. But Tony Stark found out how he was doing that and then just made it better.
Because he's got money, you know.
Yeah,
why not?
Because you Tony Stark's a genius and then has
variations of web shooters.
Yeah.
What?
So there's a new villain and a few new characters we got introduced to in this one?
Yes. What's really great about this, Marvel does a great job with the Vulture. A lot of people, when I heard that the Vulture was going to be the main villain of this one, I was like, what, the old dude that has wings?
Right, yeah, the 80-year-old that's about to die.
Like, this isn't going to be a great villain. But then they make him a man's man, or just like a man of the people, where he just wants to work for, he's trying to make his family. I say it's like he becomes Walter White of the Marvel Universe.
That's a perfect description.
Yes.
Word.
Right, where, Michael Keaton and Tidy Whiteys.
Yeah, exactly. He'd film a little bit better than Bryan Cranston did. But, I mean, that's just Birdman as well.
Birdman.
Ironic roles.
Yeah.
See, and when I went back, going back to when we were talking about movies coming out, like, what was it, in January or February that we did that? I even said, I'm like, Michael Keaton, didn't he just do the Birdman? And
yeah,
like,
exactly.
I'm like, why isn't it?
But he does so good. He is a likable character. The scene, okay, this is like spoiling it hard. Like, this just went like rotten and curdled. How bad I'm gonna spoil this movie.
Go balls deep, dude.
Okay. It is this whole time. You know that his love interest of this whole movie has been Liz. And he finally asks her out to homecoming, the homecoming dance. And he's getting ready. Aunt May's helping him out. He's learning some 80s dance moves because it's an 80s themed homecoming. And then he knocks on the door of Liz's house. And lo and behold, the door opens and it is Michael Keaton. And it just blows your mind. I I did not see that coming at all. I was like, oh man, I feel so happy. I'm so happy for this. And then that happens. I go, oh, shit.
Oh, is he the father?
Yeah, he's the father
of Liz. And when I was in the theaters, I go, what?
Yeah.
Like, really loud. And everyone's just like, shh. I was like, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, like, it surprised the crap out of me. Just totally caught you off guard. And that's what they went for. And after that, like, it gets so tense because he's acting completely normal and everything. He doesn't know that Peter Parker is Spider-Man. And then while they're going through, while they're getting driven by Michael Keaton to the dance, he starts piecing it together because of events that Peter wasn't there for, that Spider-Man was there for.
Yeah.
And just because of his disappearances at key events like Liz's party, and then they are part of a trivia thing, and he disappears and wasn't there, and he didn't go onto the Washington Monument. He starts piecing it together, and then he sends Liz in before he sends in Peter. And you can just see that Peter is realizing that he's realizing. And as soon as he's like, hey, Liz, honey, why don't you go inside? I'm going to give him the talk. And she's like, oh, okay, Daddy. And so she leaves. And then as soon as she leaves and he sees that she goes up to talk to some friends, he opens up the glove compartment, grabs his Glock, and then just turns around and says, does she know?
Yeah.
And it is intense. And it's such a great way to bring up and show how Peter Parker is a kid. Mm-hmm. And he's not ready. And we need to... He needs to grow up and get ready to be the hero that he's going to. This got 93% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is 1% lower than Spider-Man 2. So give it enough time.
It's sitting at 260 critical mm-hmm. reviews currently, which is a typical standard for the Marvel films to date.
Mm-hmm. But if you give it enough time, it might just rock above or tie Spider-Man 2.
I really hope that it does go above it, because this Spider-Man is probably the best Spider-Man to date. Because
yes. like films aside, the role itself being filled in by Tom Holland's...
The movie itself. I'm just saying pacing and everything. It's slice of life. It's not a Spider-Man movie as much as it is a Peter Parker movie. And right. that's what you needed. Yeah.
And then you find out that MJ is not Mary Jane. It's Michelle
Jones. Yeah, Michelle Jones. Go ahead, Nicholas Thomas.
Danny Glover.
Okay, yes. That actually Donald brings Glover. Up a good point. Donald Glover... Not Danny Glover.
Donald, that's what I meant. Sorry.
Yeah, Donald Glover plays, what was his name? Aaron Davis? Yep. Wow, I got it. Okay, so Aaron Davis, who is Prowler in the comic books, or one of the iterations of Prowler. And
the brother of Jefferson Davis.
Yeah. And the uncle to Miles Davis. No, not Miles Davis. What am I talking? Miles Morales. There we go.
Miles Morales. Jefferson yeah. Davis marries...
Miles Davis.
His...
I'm going back to like the 1920s.
Yes, there's some cousin connections.
If peeing your pants is cool, then yes,
Miles Morales. Morales. The future Spider-Man.
Yes, Miles Morales. So this is a way for either they could incorporate Kid Arachnid in here, instead of making it a Spider-Man, and just have him Kid Arachnid, and possibly, even if Sony takes it away, they could still have a Spider-Folk, a Spider-Person. But who knows? That could be a good thing.
Well, and the way that deal breaks down is I recently heard over another podcast that Sony and Marvel inked 3 film deals each, so Sony gets 3, Marvel gets 3.
Mm-hmm.
This, all the money from Homecoming goes to Sony. That's part of the deal. So, like, Marvel made it, they get all the money. And so what Marvel gets is they get him for 20 minutes in Civil War. They get him in Avengers 3 and possibly 4, so that might seal the deal. He might end in the Infinity Wars saga with Avengers. Mm-hmm. But Sony gets 2 more solo Spider-Man films out of Marvel.
One big thing also that they hinted at with the mid-credit
scenes
is that they might be hinting at a Sinister Six. One of the other villains that you get, because you get a solid 4 technically with this, you get Prowler, you get Shocker. Vulture. Shocker and Vulture are the ones that you get to see. You actually get to see. You also get to see Matt Gargan, who is played by the guy that plays Tuco's nephew or Crazy 8. He plays Crazy 8 in Better Call Saul. Matt Gargan is in here, and that means Scorpion's in here. And he hints at, I've got a few friends that want to take out the Spider-Kid.
Yeah, Sinister Six usually contains Dr. Octopus, Rhino, Scorpion.
Mysterio.
That would be great. Maybe if they don't go Serious Six because they don't want to touch Doc Ock, they probably, but they could bring in Mysterio, which would be great because then they can tie it in with Doctor Strange that way.
I wouldn't mind seeing a reiteration of Rhinox, though.
Oh, Rhino? Yeah, the Rhino? That would be great because he got so little screen time, and Paul Giamatti didn't do that great of a job as a Russian in a freaking mech.
No.
Like, it was sad. That's not how I see Rhino.
Rhino's
and Hammerhead.
Right in a mech.
No, he is the mech.
No, he's gigantic.
He's like the Juggernaut, yeah. But a Rhino instead.
Did they have a Sergei Nikolaevich in the movie?
No. Not that I saw. They did have the Tinkerer in it as well. He was the one that was making all of the Chitauri stuff into the weapons that everybody was using.
Mm-hmm.
So
the 4th iteration of Sinister Six included Venom.
They're not going to bring Venom in.
Venom is getting his own movie, though.
No, yeah. He is, and this is still potentially being cut. I don't know how much, if any, of this is getting left in, but what sucks is that Sony and Marvel, the leadership from both sides of the filming industry, have been quoted saying 2 completely different things.
Mm-hmm.
Sony, I think, has said it is part of the MCU, and Marvel is saying it's not, or vice versa. It's something weird, like they haven't knocked it out yet.
I think that they both agreed that Venom is not part of the MCU.
That would probably be best for them anyway.
Yes, because they want to make it R-rated, and it can be its own thing. Make a Venomverse if you really want to.
Sure.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Anything else to wrap this up?
Go see it.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Well, here's the thing, though. Throwing in Aaron Davis gives us access to a few other people, too. Gwen Spider and Miles Morales.
Who's Gwen Spider?
Gwen Stacy takes over Peter Parker's role after Peter Parker dies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to kill off Tom Holland for that.
No, especially bringing him in like this.
I gave a hint that Tom Holland will always be the Spider-Man in the next movies.
Good. 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 I'm happy with that. I'm happy with that.
They locked him in. You know, and he's making money. Why would they change it?
He's also young. He's also really young. He is
he
the
could last
youngest
a decade,
Avenger
like,
that they have.
He could last
like,
a decade as Spider-Man yeah. easily.
Oh, very easily. He could last 2 decades.
2
as
decades
Spider-Man
as young as he
Spider-Man.
Is.
Yeah.
He like, could get to the veteran Spider-Man eventually. Yes. Nicholas, you ready to just unload a little bit on
yes.
your favorite film of the year?
My favorite film of the year was Guardians of the Galaxy 2. We did a a bit on this a few episodes back. But
a little spoiler-free at the time.
Yeah, now that it's had a little bit of time to pass, we have a little bit more statistics on it. And, of course, we have a kind of a look of where it fits during the for the year and how good of a movie it was. It scored a 67% on Metacritic, an 81% on Rotten Tomatoes, and 3 out of 4 on from Roger Ebert. And that opening weekend alone topped out $146.5 million.
Ooh.
That's
not bad for Marvel.
Ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
This will actually go in my books as probably one of the best sequels ever done.
Strong standpoint, sir.
I personally give it about 5 things that make it a great sequel. Like, one, a good sequel is new, but it doesn't throw away the original.
And what would those? What's the top thing?
What do you mean?
That you would say would be the reason why it's the one of the best sequels.
They kept the feel of the original, but put everyone in a new situation, and the evolution of how they went through it was a natural progression from where they should have been. And because they were able to expand upon the characters themselves, it made it awesome.
Yeah, I could agree with that. I also watched it. Good movie.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet, and that makes me sad. Because I love the first Guardians, and
they took everything from the original and just they deepened the characters, they deepened the mythos of the world they're in, the universe, because they're in space. they introduced some little tidbits here for fans of the original comic books. Sylvester Stallone's character was actually originally the first team leader for the original Guardians of the Galaxy.
What was his name? I can't remember. I don't know exactly much of the Guardians thing, because before this movie came out, Guardians was such a kind of obscure Marvel IP, you know? And so not a lot of people knew much about Star-Lord or...
Yeah.
Or anything. And then they brought him into the public eye more, instead of just the people that know comics.
Yeah. Star-Lord is definitely not one of those ones that isn't really talked about much against, say, like, Thor and
mm-hmm.
Captain America and...
Iron Man and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he played as Stikkar Ogord, or what people recognize as Starhawk.
Okay.
And then you had other people in that whole thing, like Miley Cyrus played their version of the android person.
Miley Cyrus?
Yeah, you didn't see her till one of the cutscenes at the end.
What?
Yes.
The crystal guy that was...
Hey, y'all. I'm a cyborg.
The crystal guy that was all covered in, like, ice in his face and everything. That was actually Michael Rosenbaum from Smallville.
Oh, mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah. A lot of cameos, a lot of awesome stuff. They introduced us to a whole bunch of different ideas behind it.
A lot of Easter eggs.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Nice. I just need to see this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, you do. One of my favorite character, like, progressions that I liked in this was Michael Rooker's...
Yondu.
Yondu. Like, he... You like him in the first one, you love him in the second one.
Oh, yeah.
Like, because he kind of goes AWOL against, like, all of his...
Guys.
Freaking all of his guys.
Yeah, all of the Reavers?
Yeah. And the reason being is because they were all trying to overthrow him, saying that he was weak and whatnot. And
because he loves Star-Lord.
Star-Lord was basically his son.
Yep. Yeah.
And he was Mary Poppins.
the whole time. It's okay for like the first like 5 minutes of like
I this keep hearing part that like Mary Poppins is like a great like joke from
I could spoil it for you if you Guardians. Want.
Yeah, go
there's
ahead.
A part when they're falling and Star Lord's using his jetpack type thing and Yondo is reaching up and grabbing his little arrow thing, you know, the one he whistles and it moves around.
Yeah,
and he's holding it like the umbrella like Mary Poppins does as he falls down, and Star Lord looks up. He's like, "You look like Mary Poppins." He's like, "Is he cool?" He's like, "Fuck yeah, he's cool." He's like, "I'm Mary Poppins, y'all."
I liked where the part where it went slow-mo while he's killing everybody.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he's whistling. And all, that thing's going super fast. Everybody else is like...
The other person that he actually compounded the relationship with was Rocket.
Rocket,
Yondo yeah. and Rocket got really close, and it was really cool.
It was almost like Rocket basically became his son too.
I can see that.
In kind of aspect, like
Rocket needs a father figure, like hardcore.
Well, Yondo goes, "You know, I know you." He's like, "No, you don't." He's like, "Yes, I do." You hate everyone because nobody respects you, and like just goes on this tangent. And he goes, "You're good."
You're good.
And then the epic road trip montage that they have going through the portals.
Yes.
It's like, very... yeah, you don't want to do more than two jumps. You have like irreparable damage. You just hit it 87 times. No, 300 some odd times. He's like, "I know." And then their faces are just
like, yeah, their faces all going. It's that part's hilarious.
I can't wait, like, because now I gotta wait until I can rent it to see it now, because
yeah, it, dude, you should buy it. You don't rent it, just buy it. Just
straight up,
it should be on your shelf.
Mm-hmm.
Up on the thing, just waiting for you to just take it down and watch it over and over again.
Now, I heard that the soundtrack wasn't as good as the second or the first one.
I have to call bull on that. It was great. The soundtrack was just as epic. They moved it a little bit farther into, instead of the 70s and 80s music, it was more 80s.
Okay.
And it was there was a feel and a reason for it, and it tied in well with the story.
Yes. Nice. Like the songs that they chose were basically like things that,
like the montage between Kurt Russell's character and Star Lord, and they're doing Cat yes. Stevens.
Yes. Yeah.
No, it wasn't as epic as the original, but it was more fitting for the movie.
Yeah, and if you could, people that are listening to this right now, if you could have seen Jeff's face, it was just the intrigue of like, what?
Okay, cool. All right, sign me up, I guess.
Yeah, it was good. It was great.
Batista's character was freaking hilarious, especially when the. Can't remember her name. The
Nebula.
Nebula.
Gamora.
No. Wait.
Nebula?
Is it Nebula?
Yeah.
The one, the new one?
Nebula is
Mantis.
Nebula is
Mantis. There we go.
Gamora's
sister. I haven't
even
seen the movie.
Mantis is the new one. That
he hasn't even seen the movie.
Was just awful too.
Mantis was freaking on, like he's like, "Oh, do me next. And he's all, and she's all like, "Wow, you really, what? That was funny." And then freaking he goes, "All right, just put me to sleep." And she goes over to him and he goes, "Sleep." And he knocks out. And he...
No, and it was, yes. It was great. No, but Dax was incredibly just off the
Drax.
Wall. Drax, there. Was off the wall, just horrible.
Not Shepard?
Oh, horrible sorry. To her.
Yes.
And
you're the most repulsive thing I've ever seen in my life.
No, so nonchalantly, it's like he didn't even realize he was doing it. That's the reason why it was so hilarious.
Yeah.
So, was the hype... I remember so much hype about Kurt Russell's character and how much they spent to do the CG for him in his planet form. Did it live up to the hype that was given?
Oh, yes.
His planet was Kurt Russell.
It was actually just a bunch of Kurt Russells
yes.
put together. So.
It was the essence of Kurt Russell in the planet.
Yeah. Nice.
It was the essence of Wyatt Earp in Tombstone,
Snake
wrapped up in a planet.
Snake Plissken.
Yes.
Or that Hasselhoff endless meme.
Oh.
Face after the face junk. After face.
It was junk after junk after junk.
Of his face.
Yeah. No, but they did a real good job of keeping rules from the original. Like, no one has changed very much from the original. But they... were really good about introducing new things around that. Like the Celestials. The Sovereign.
Are those the Gold People?
The Sovereign is the Gold People.
Sovereign okay. is the Gold People.
Who are the Celestials?
Celestials is Ego. What Kurt Russell is.
Okay.
And someone else.
Basically.
Uatu? Do they bring in a Watcher?
No, hold on. Hold on. The other Celestial is Star-Lord.
Well, yeah, duh. Mm-hmm.
But his dad. By blood.
Yeah, those are the only two.
And yes, now that you brought in the Watchers, one of the cutscenes at the end, you see Stan Lee talking to the Watchers. And that it kind of ties in that his role has been a Watcher through all the Marvel movies.
That's why hilarious. He's everywhere. Yeah. That is yeah. so funny. That's great.
I was cracking up laughing when I saw that. I was like, oh, what?
We didn't even get to, like, the end cred scene for Spider-Man.
Oh, what?
Did you not stay until the very end?
I did.
Because I thought that was just hilarious. It was just funny.
With the...
With Captain America?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Sorry.
We went back to...
End cred scene is hilarious and it makes fun of everything. But, that's it.
Great movie. I give it a 10 out of 10.
Nice. And I didn't give a rating for Spider-Man. I would definitely... I'm a little more hesitant with my 10s. But, I would definitely give this a 9.5. Because this is everything that I wanted from a Spider-Man movie. And I think that it almost goes without saying, if we're talking about our best for the year, that it's probably going to be in that 9 to 10 range, for sure.
Pirates of the Caribbean was 8.59 for me.
Almost a 9. Jeez, guys, get your ratings in order.
I know, sorry, we're...
How about you, Joe?
Place.
I said, go all the way back 9. To Logan. Oh.
Yeah, he said
9. Well, I said it's in my top 5 favorite films of the entire year. And yeah,
give it a rating.
If I didn't give it a rating, it was a 9.5 easily. Yeah.
Oh, sorry about that, Mike.
Now that we're all back,
like an audio, you could do an audio clipping of just like a 9.5, 9,
yeah. 8.59, all yeah. those
8.59.
And the only reason I didn't say Transformers 9. For mine was because I didn't want you to like sit there and look at me like.
Well, you went quite deep into
Matt,
it in the previous
that's
episode.
That's just how I look at you.
He likes to gaze longingly in your eyes.
It's because I did the head tilt, like...
Yeah.
And it wasn't anything bad.
No.
But you got offended.
He just looked at him coyly.
No, you can ask Joe. Corner. I wrote a lot on the research I did on... this and my feelings.
I saw it in there. It's like 500 pages worth of dialogue. You just need to have your own like side thing where you can just talk forever.
I need to have a filter where I stop.
All right. I think what we should do is go in reverse order. Hey, Nick.
Hey.
What was the worst movie for this year?
Oh, let's get a little more exposition into this, though.
Wait.
So now we're going into flops.
Flops of the year, guys.
Yeah, flops of the year.
Fine.
Sorry. So
no, I thought we called it the good, the bad.
The good, the bad, and the what? The thing that we cut.
The thing we're about to cut because we're running so late.
Today. Yeah. Okay. So we talked about the cream of the crop, and just everything that we thought was amazing. Now we're going to go back and we're going to reverse that and talk about the bottom of the barrel in our minds. So right now we're going to go and. You heard a lot from Nick. We're about to hear a lot from Nick again. Nick, why don't you tell us what you thought was kind of crappy or shitty or whatever, you know? That stuff that just kind of left a bad taste in your mouth. What was that bad taste for you, Nick?
Kind of like being boozled. Oh, wait,
there
sorry.
Was a lot of hype for this, and it was single-handedly one of the most cinematic letdowns I have ever seen.
Ooh,
wow.
Ouch.
Ghost in the Shell.
Oh, yeah. There was a lot of stuff that went on with this one.
I was a fan of the original animes. They were great. The story is very compelling, and they just didn't... They simplified it so much for the movie that it wasn't even the same story to me. I'm like, okay, you got cyborgs, and that's about it. And
so what I've noticed a lot with anime and when we try to westernize it, that you lose the flavor of the anime. What even some an anime that is kind of western feeling, like Cowboy Bebop or Ghost in the Shell or Death Note, any of those ones, you still once it goes westernized, it loses its heart a little bit. Am I right in saying that, Nick?
It does, and that's one of the big issues they had. It's the whole idea of Ghost in the Shell. It was based off a whole bunch of Japanese concepts,
mm-hmm.
and they threw Scarlett Johansson in there.
Yeah, there are plenty of Japanese actresses that would have been great in this film, and mm-hmm. they had to whitewash it, which happens hard. In Hollywood all the time.
Scarlett Johansson is Ghost in the Shell?
Yeah.
She's not the main seen character. Any of the trailers, Matt?
No. She is Major.
Okay.
We could make a whole episode on whitewashing issues and our opinions, because I have a few things to argue in favor of why this works, but we're not going to do that right now. You're going to give us the floppy reasons why you don't like it, and then we're going to keep moving forward.
Well, I have five good reasons for you. The first, we already covered, whitewashing. It didn't work for him. The other thing is, the name Ghost in the Shell, for anyone that has no idea about computer programming or the actual anime, they're lost on the name itself. So they weren't able to bring in those outliers that have never heard of this series. The big thing is, the fans, they hated it. Everything about it, they're like, you don't need to remake this.
I would say that the casting of the guy with the eyes, though, it was almost like spot on. They made him like almost spot on to what he looked like in the anime.
Blue Aspect, who played as Batu, mm-hmm. or Batau, however you say that, her cohort in the story.
Yeah, go ahead, Nick. I'm sorry.
Well, that's fine. And before it was ever released, it had a really big slew of bad reviews, which also didn't help it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was mostly, it was a very lackluster movie with a whole bunch of CG. And that's all the movie was. It had no meat and potatoes to it. It also didn't do well in the box office for, I would have to say, the biggest reason. It came out in March. You had Logan. You had Beauty and the Beast. You had... All of those big names coming out.
Maybe that's why I didn't hear about
it. Yeah. It came out, and it looked like it was going to be a nice-looking movie. The trailers made it look fun, at least,
in the spots that you're like, if you were a fan, you recognized a lot of the aesthetics, and you're like, oh, maybe this might be cool.
I really liked how they made the...
The invisible suit?
Yeah, or not just the invisible suit, but like that assassin, like Geisha, Geisha bot that came in.
With the spiders.
That was like really cool. Yeah, and she moved away all spider like. That looked really cool. I still haven't seen this movie, but
the problem with it is they grabbed Scarlett Johansson because she just came off of doing Lucy and just came off of doing Black Widow, and they're like, oh, she does these roles. Why not plug her in this?
Yeah,
let's do it. And they didn't put any thought into it.
Okay, my only, we gotta keep moving forward, guys. But my only interjection that I'll just give you guys as food for thought, in arguing in favor of against stereotypical whitewashing of films, is the character Major. It was a Japanese character because this originated from Japan.
Mm-hmm.
So why would they put any other race in the role? But if you look at the concept and original arc of what makes up Major Major and why we even question the soul of humanity, is the fact that she is supposed to be... she was a Japanese chick originally rescued from wreckage or whatever and mm-hmm. put into a bot form. The question I pose, or at least the statement or the origin of the story, is just simply this. She is given a completely unknown identity, and the purpose of that, at least the way Hollywood is trying to take it, was if in the original manga, if you understand that Ghost in the Shell was the idea of her trying to find herself and discover who she is as an AI / human being. Not so much the, she's an Asian. That's why the Hollywood was trying to get away with casting Scarlett Johansson. It's like, it's not about her race or the race card or the fact that she's a white woman. It's the fact that she's, and they tried to make her kind of Asian with the makeup a little bit. But not to, like, disrespect the Asian community, but just to give her the idea that she has no identity.
But the thing is if you're going to do that, then you need to change the setting as well. They still leave it in a cyberpunk Japan, and they leave all of that flavor in there, but then they take the main character, who is supposed to be Japanese, and turn her into an American? That doesn't make sense. That's the thing. Like,
well, I know. I'm not. Yeah. Did I say they pulled it off well? No, not at all.
But that if you're pulling from source, but if you're pulling from source material, and this is kind of like going on a side tangent. This is kind of my fear for the new Netflix Death Note that's coming out. They're doing that. They're changing the races of a lot of the characters, like L. He's supposed to be Japanese. Light is.
Main character Asian in descent, though? I thought he
both
was.
Both of them are... It takes place in Japan. Yeah, this one looks like it takes more possibly in either Seattle or where... So it's kind of changing it, and then they're saying that they're trying to stay near close to the source material, which doesn't make sense to me. If they're going to change everything, then why are you going saying that you're going to change or stay near the source material? Maybe they're just going to change the setting and then stay on the same path. But if you if you're going to do that, if you're going to change some things, you can't set it in Japan and then just say she's Scarlett Johansson now.
I know that's the thing.
And if I'm,
the execution sucked ass, which is why this movie flopped, according to Dick.
Yeah,
and critics alike.
Yeah,
bringing it full circle back. Nick, concluding thoughts.
I'd already kind of covered it. It's just they.
That's fine.
As much as they hyped, they didn't
deliver.
They didn't deliver. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's the rating that you give it?
Yeah. What do you give it, Nick?
Out of 10, 2.5.
Oh man, that's actually not too bad.
Based on bad taste in my mouth, I would say a little bit of sour and iron.
All right, Mr. Barry.
Oh, am I next?
We're throwing it around, why not?
No, I am next. Yeah, I am next, sorry. Okay.
You're going in reverse.
So, I apologize for, like, in the spirit of things, this is my pick, because I don't usually watch a lot of bad movies, and if I don't watch them, I wait until they can't, or if I'm going to watch them, I wait until I don't have to pay anything for them, and then watch them and be like, oh, okay, well, that was better than I thought it was going to be, or whatever. But one that I do recognize and kind of agree with all the ratings and stuff that I've seen is Chips.
Chips
got 15% on Rotten Tomatoes. I don't know what the user score was, but it wasn't much higher. Probably like 10 to 20% higher than that.
I was
going to
say, I think it's like a 34% maybe.
Yeah. And the reason why this was coming out at the same time, and it was being trailers were coming out for it the same time that Baywatch was coming out, which didn't do too well itself. But looking at this, this was definitely by far the movie that seemed like the fish out of the water. The whole trailer, from what I remember seeing, it's got Dax Shepard and Michael Pena in it, and Michael Pena plays a huge homophobe in it, and it's extremely apparent that he's a homophobe because he's super awkward whenever Dax Shepard has a Speedo on or whatever.
The discomfort is real.
Yeah, and then one time Dax gets hurt while he's in his Speedo and he can't move, and Michael Pena has to grab him up and tries to run him towards... he's all awkward about it. He doesn't even want to do it, even though his friend's hurt or his partner's hurt, and just because he's in a Speedo. And so he finally grabs him up, and his junk is all in a nice little dick pocket. Sorry, but it's a Speedo dick pocket. And he starts running, and he trips, and his junk smashes into his face. And it seemed like through all of these trailers, that's what the comedy was. It's a homophobe having to deal with gay stuff, or things that he would think would be considered as gay. And that's where the comedy was supposed to come from.
Well, the original of this, it was a lot more innocent.
Yeah, this one was a lot more... this seems like it was a lot more sexually fueled.
I actually watched the movie.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead and tell me if I'm wrong, because I haven't seen this. So that... And I am completely... Just saying, this one is a flop, and this one, in my mind, is probably the biggest flop because of that, and it left a bad taste in my mouth just because of the trailer.
It basically, the part that you're talking about, actually, in the movie, he's not wearing the Speedo whatsoever. It's actually all hanging out, and his ball sack hits him in the chin.
Because in the trailer, they show... Like, they filmed it where it is just him, like, in the Speedo, and you see the Speedo hitting him in the face.
Well, yeah, that's so, for the public.
Yeah.
Commercials. So the actual movie, it's actually his ball sack smacking him in the face.
That, okay, see, like...
Gratuitous. Okay, so, okay, and going with that, he's not completely, like, homophobe, but he's definitely not comfortable with hugging somebody that's wearing nothing but a jock strap while he's wearing nothing but a jock strap kind of thing. And he sees two other people do it, and he's just like, what the crap just happened? So that's that scenario. The rest of the movie pans out. It actually, like, his character actually grows to understand Dax Shepard's character more of... Yeah, it's whatever. Don't worry about it. Kind of thing. Like, he's a hippie, basically. That's what Dax Shepard is.
Yeah.
And, yeah. So, I would still say that it's probably a flop due to the fact that it has nothing to do with, like, the original TV series Chips. Except for the fact that they're riding bikes.
Yeah. And there's no robot.
Oh,
man. Our ball swiping chin action.
But, yeah, Michael Pena is actually a sex addict, by the way.
Okay.
Throughout the whole movie.
Well, I might give this a try, but I'm just saying, because I haven't seen any bad movies this year that came from this year.
Of like, Jeffrey's own volition.
Yeah, like, because I'm not going to pay the money to go and see a bad movie. The other one that I might have brought up, and I didn't because it still looked really interesting, was The Circle. But, like, it did really bad critically, but that doesn't mean that I would necessarily think that it was bad.
Well, this year has been heavy hitting for a lot of the real big raunchy comedies.
Yeah.
And it's a trend right now, and they're not all pulling it off. There's that, one with that blonde chick and Goldie Hawn that everyone hated.
Oh, crap, what was it called? I can't remember. I can't remember, but it was something.
It was so bad we don't remember.
Yeah, it was Amy Schumer and Goldie Hawn, right?
Yeah. And Goldie Hawn plays Amy Schumer's mother or something, grandmother.
Yeah.
And on that note, guys,
Christian wanted to go see it. Anyways, sorry.
Matt, your turn.
Matt, your pick to throw and flick.
Apparently, I'm the only one that thinks this, or I guess on freaking Rotten Tomatoes, it did better than I would give it. But I watched Cars 3. Yes, I have daughters. That doesn't really matter.
I do too, and I don't like Cars, so I have not seen a single one of these films.
I don't have children, I don't want to watch Cars no matter what. I haven't seen a single freaking one, and I'll never will.
Your daughters aren't old enough to admire Cars. Anyways.
You know what?
So, Cars 3, basically, I think, just went back to, like, the original Cars, and it was... It just seemed very lackluster to me. Like,
well, if you read into it, this one was technically the sequel to the first one. Number two was technically all in Mater's head.
Well, number two was such a f*** up from Pixar. Why would they continue from that one?
Well, okay, hold on. I love the second one.
Really?
Just because Mater was just freaking hilarious. Like, it was just nothing but Mater.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it was a Mater dream.
Well,
see, I didn't...
It was a Mater potato.
But at the same time, like, essentially, Lightning McQueen is...
Trying to prove himself
again. But this time, there's faster cars, more aerodynamic cars.
State-of-the-art cars.
Well, basically, what's going on in NASCAR right now is that their cars look nothing like what they did, like, 10 years ago, basically.
Makes sense.
So... That's kind of where this is going, is that they're pushing...
I haven't seen a new NASCAR car in a while, so I don't know what you're talking about.
He's a NASCAR fan,
I'm a sports fan. I love NASCAR. Just
no one likes sports cars going circles.
You know what?
Except for him. Hey, I like the track that looks like a bean, because it actually throws him for a loop.
Holy shit, a left turn. What do I do?
I give Cars 3 a 4. Or a 3.5. Like, that's...
And you still consider it a flop?
If I want to watch a NASCAR movie, I will watch Talladega Nights, and I will be happy.
Days of Thunder.
If it's something else...
Shake and bake.
No.
8 pound, 3 ounce, baby Jesus.
That's our thing,
shake and bake.
Nope.
I'm going to come at you like a spider monkey. Shake and bake.
No.
Like really thin pancake, shake and bake.
Fine.
Okay.
Yes, he gave in.
Use your witchcraft, Jeff.
I did.
He pulled a Neil Patrick Harris from How I Met Your Mother. High five, come on. I'm not going to put it down until you give me a high five.
I got you. Okay.
Come on, high five. And he held his hand up for an entire freaking episode.
Until somebody came over and gave him one.
What?
What, Nick?
I said we weren't trying to bash you, Matt.
No, everybody always tries to bash me.
No,
You have to be bent over for me to want to do that.
Let's see here. Transformers talk. I got bashed.
You didn't get bashed. Did you even listen to the episode?
Like I just now did about
Cars.
Did
you even listen to the episode?
I did.
Yeah,
I you an
Mr.
Light.
Mr.
You
were, mentality. You were, no, you got offended because I looked at you. I was like, Michael Bay... suck a dick. Like, that's all. That's all. Transformers is great. Michael Bay can suck a D. That's all I care about.
Guys, let's
there you go. There's nothing wrong with Transformers.
We love you, Matt. We love you, Matt. And your sexy beard.
Yeah.
What, a good 3 to 2.5, you were saying? Or 3 to 4?
3.5, 4.
And the thing is that I totally agree with you that Cars is shit, so...
If anything, we're on board with your choice.
Yeah, we're on board with your choice. I've been on board. I think that Cars is like a stain on Pixar, so...
All right, guys, we'll wrap this up with my worst pick of the year. It was a random choice for me to watch this. I saw it available on a streaming service that shall remain nameless and decided to go give this a whirlwind, King Arthur, Legend of the Sword. Now, I'm a Charlie Hunnam fan from Vikings? The days of Sons of Anarchy.
That's the other guy that looks like the guy
from Sons of Anarchy. God, you are throwing me off there, sorry. Mr. Barry. Charlie Hunnam.
You know what? Your red glow right now, yeah. Your red glow on your nose and your cheeks is not the only thing that's throwing me. I'm not the only thing that's throwing you off.
Continue. Anyway,
I'm listening.
I love Charlie Hunnam in Sons of Anarchy, and this guy was really proud of this film production, and I'm sure he is. I listened to him be interviewed by Chris Hardwick on The Nerdist. Real great guy in real life. Spends his time, I think, in London area, anyway. But as far as the movie is concerned, it kind of takes a more brutal, cutthroat take on the Sword in the Stone Disney mythology. Basically, Arthur was robbed of birthright. He was raised up in the alleys of the city. But once he pulls the sword from the stone, he's forced to acknowledge his true legacy, whether he likes it or not. And that's kind of the whole premise of the thing.
This is the one with Jude Law in it as well, right?
Yep.
That's like the mage or whatever.
Starring Jude Law, Eric Bana's in there, Aidan Gillen of Game of Thrones fame.
It has a great roster of people, but it couldn't save it, right?
Yes. The biggest fallacy of this was really Guy Ritchie, who directed it. I put a note here. I'm going to quote Peter Travers of the Rolling Stone. He wrote in a review, "Guy Ritchie can turn London crime dramas into cinematic lightning, but apply his fast cuts and jagged pacing to Arthurian legend, and you get, well, a brutal bleeding mess." And I 100% absolutely agree with that statement to its core, because the thing that immediately threw me off as I watched this film, I was like, I love the setting. Oh, this is like Game of Thrones. Oh, Lord of the Rings. Like, this is cool. Like, if they play it out in the same pacing, cinematically, mm-hmm. filmography, this will be great. No, freaking Guy Ritchie, when...
Lock, Stock of Two and Two Smoking Barrels.
Yeah, stuff.
Like that, right?
Yeah.
That's what I'm just making sure that I'm on the right page here.
Sherlock Holmes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did he do Sherlock Holmes?
Yes.
Okay.
So, Guy Ritchie's known for... Think, like, moments in Hot Fuzz where they're talking over their scheme to do things. It's all a fast cut while they're narrating the scene. That really has literally no place in medieval times or swords and sorcery or any of that.
I feel like it could sit somewhere. It could sit somewhere good if it was like a great like heist movie. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to defend
absolutely. If this was not tied into the Legend of the Sword and the Stone.
If this wasn't King Arthur. If this wasn't King Arthur and his Round Table kind of bullshit, it would work. It could work.
Yes. Like Knight's Tale and stuff. Yes, yeah. Absolutely 100%. And if they were going for a more comical twist, Ocean's 11 comedy style,
yeah.
Totally. Where it fails, though, is like Charlie Hunnam's, like, when he... Literally, they do that. When they're in the dungeons or in the wherever, and they're talking about how they're going to do this to make this happen, they do quick cuts, and Charlie Hunnam is narrating, Mr. Arthur, King Arthur himself is narrating how we're going to do this. And so anyway, I mean, his native accent works great for this because it's freaking King Arthur.
Mm-hmm.
But the directing and execution of this just really pulled me out of it. Oh, and then let me not forget the soundtrack. Forgive me, I don't know who composed most of this, but the choice for
Hans the music. Zimmer.
the choice for pacing was very tribal and clubby feeling. Like a lot of, yeah. No, it had a lot of, which fits great in a crime thriller or fast cuts Guy Ritchie style thing. It does not fit in a medieval world setting.
You want more like classical style.
You want a
like,
little more symphony, a little more air.
More Hans Zimmer.
Yes. I mean, cinematically and musically, if they had,
or go Knight's Tale style and just put rock in there, thunder.
Which honestly, even though that was not the tone of this movie, that would have worked better than the tribal underground kind of clubby feel that they gave for the soundtrack mixed with his fast cuts.
I got you.
Anyway, guys, concluding, Rotten Tomatoes gave it 28%. I give it maybe 2 out of 10. Like, I didn't even watch the whole movie. About an hour in, it's a 2-hour film, I stopped watching. Because the music and the cinematography pulled me out so hard from even caring about where this was going to go, I stopped watching.
Damn.
That's sad.
I usually sit through films, even bad ones, but this one I couldn't. It just, like I said, the execution of how it was filmed pulled me out so far from the setting.
Yeah, I didn't want to watch it anymore. The last bad movie that I watched
gave a chance.
Or like, yeah, okay. Like, I don't try, let, if a user, so this is how I usually pick my movies, is if it's a bad critical review, which you get a lot with horror and comedy, you'll get bad critical reviews, and then you'll get audience reviews, like if I go off of Rotten Tomatoes. And then if both the users and the critics agree on something, I'm probably not going to give it a chance. You know?
Right.
You know what I mean?
What was the last movie that you kind of gave a chance that you probably Harbinger shouldn't Down. Give?
Harbinger Down. I almost didn't finish it all. It was made in 2015. It was a bad. It was a really cheap kind of like just horror film. And you can cut this all out. I know that this is just for us basically now.
Right.
Just gave it a chance. It had like the theme type of practical effects. There's one point where like liquid just started like and like gooping up into itself and stuff, and then it had like the puppetry kind of stuff. That was really cool, but it was a really cheesy and stupid movie. But the practical effects were great. Sorry.
Not a problem. Anyway, guys, Nick?
I was going to say, there's good news for people who do like Charlie Hunnam. He has changed his stance as of May on whether he would play Oliver Queen in DCU big screen movie.
I thought he was also on the chopping block for New Wolverine as well.
I heard rumors.
Wait.
He's been Oliver addressed Queen? By WB to play Green Arrow. Oliver Queen.
Yeah, I know that.
There's no movie. There's been no Green Arrow even considered yet for the
He would be a great Oliver Queen, DC, by the way. Like, I love Oliver Queen. He would be a great Oliver Queen.
What about the guy that plays him right now?
What, you can say the same thing for about The Flash, man. Cinematic Universe.
Greg Gustin is like, never going to be in the films, nor is... What's his name?
Oliver Queen. CW Oliver Queen.
Steve Amell.
Yes. And with that, guys, that is our blockbuster faves for the first half of the year and our flops. I hope you guys have enjoyed what you've heard this time around with our new format. We are going to try to continue this trend with picking more specific things. We'll still do games. We'll still do television. We'll still do comics and other things. Eventually, we'll do comics or tabletops, stuff like that. We'll dive in deep and go long and hard, guys. It's the way we roll here in Nerdentials. Just to...
Go on. Sorry.
Anyway, guys, you guys can find us on this podcast on iTunes or Google Play and SoundCloud. Guys, go write a review. Go spread the word of Nerd. Get us some more exposure, guys. iTunes, Google Play, write a review. Let us know what you like.
Guys, do a thing.
Do a thing.
Leave comments on what you thought about our picks. Throw in your picks and why you chose them.
Best way to do that would probably be the email, right, Matt?
Yes.
nerdentials@gmail.com.
Thank you, Jeff.
nerdentials@gmail.com.
And as a closing note, anyone that likes to still play on the Twitters, you can find me at Mr. Blue Streak. You can find Jeff at The Jeff Berry. You can find Matt at Madman Origins. And you can find Nicholas at ThanatosDB87. Links down below in your podcast descriptions. Guys, I think that's going to be it for now. As always, nerds, we will see you on the other side.
Nerdentials@gmail.com.
2 Cars 2 critically is visually appealing as any other Pixar production, but all that dazzle can't disguise the rusty storytelling under the hood. Someone wrote, "Don't tell the kids, but Santa Claus isn't real and Pixar is fallible." Someone else wrote, "Time, perhaps, for the franchise to be towed off to the scrapyard." Sorry, Pixar.
They were all messing with freaking Mater. Anyways.
It got a beautiful 39% on Rotten Tomatoes, by the way. Over 200 reviews. Matt is the golden child of critical reviews on Pixar films, so we'll leave him alone. I'm going to cut that out, probably. Maybe that'll be in our... Don't defend it. I was just completely freaking you shit.
I know, but at the same time, like... Never mind. Anyways.
Conclude with Cars 3. Sorry, sir.